using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Tuesday, the 6th of July, year of our Lord, 2021, day 479 of America held hostage. Are you feeling free yet? Well, today we're going to start by taking a look at the fake narrative about the 4th of July that is now being pushed this year. I guess we could call it the Fauth of July, F-A-U-X of July. And we'll be right back. There's many things to talk about, so stay with us. Well, on this 6th of July, we played a rebroadcast yesterday. I want to talk about what came out over the weekend, different ways that people celebrated, and of course the people who are doing the most celebration, I guess, were the people who feel like they are winning the narrative, but I'm not so sure about that. As a matter of fact, as one listener wrote to me, he said, I hope you and your family had a stellar Independence Day. Local news everywhere seemed to be inundated with the same message about how local law enforcement officers would be cracking down on fireworks. So I spent three times as much as I typically did this last year. And he said, anyway, I heard you talking about the black boxes and cars. He said, I would caution against this messaging as it seems it will be a black app. And so what he believes is that the tracking of our cars by the mile is going to be done by a smartphone app. Pushed by the insurance companies. And, of course, that's the big issue. And without getting back into that, because I want to stay on the 4th of July, I still think it's going to be a black box because I think it has to be something that is tied to the car. Otherwise, you could just leave the phone behind. And I often think about what the people who are looking at the traffic apps, you know, they've, for the longest time, NRICS and other traffic apps, going back for decades, actually, well, maybe not several decades, but at least 10, 15 years ago, you could go online, you could look at the NRICS system, and it would show you traffic patterns. It knew, you know, Google, they would map it on there. Many other people would subscribe to that, and you could see, because they were monitoring cell phone devices, and they could see what the traffic patterns are. It's the same thing that happens now on your maps. You see that all the time. It's common. But 10 or 15 years ago, it was only available to people who subscribed to that, and they collected that information by looking at people's smartphones. And so that's nothing really new. I used to always think about when I drove in, especially this last year, at 4 o'clock in the morning when I would drive into the work with empty roads, especially empty roads, because of the lockdown. I always... I always imagined if anybody was looking at my data, they would be thumping the screen and saying, we got to check this out. There's something wrong here. Because basically, I was the only person on the road, and I drove like it. That's the only thing I miss about going to InfoWars. By the way, I want to say welcome to all the people, the new listeners on Aftermath. It's aftermath.fm if you want to follow the broadcast live and also in archives. It's another online network, and they've started carrying the show today, so I hope things... we've got no technical problems with that, but this is a first run through, and hopefully things are going to be fine with that. But again, Aftermath is where you can also now find the program in a live stream. It's an audio stream that will be going up there. But getting back to the fireworks, we had, as the Milwaukee Journal said, planning to set off fireworks at home this weekend after record sales last year. Vendors are struggling to meet demand. They said last year was a record year. I guess maybe it's that little bit of defiance that people could get into last year as we were locked down like slaves. This year, they have released the chains a little bit, you know, as you do with slaves. They talk about pork barrel projects where You get people lined up in the past, you know, and the slaves could walk past the pork barrel and they could take something out of it. And so they give you a little bit, a taste, right, of freedom. And so that's what we're getting right now. Right now is the eye of the storm, in my opinion. This is the calm before the more severe backlash, if you remember the hurricane analogy. I used to live in Florida, grew up in Florida. So, yeah, if the storm passes directly over you, there's a calm at the center, and you think it's over, and yet the worst is about to come. That's the backside of the hurricane. So don't get fooled by this. You know, don't think that, well, it's all over. They let us out of our house. Yeah, well, they're going to lock you down again, and I'm going to talk about what is coming this fall. Everybody is talking about vaccine mandates now, and I think that that is something that's been in the works for a long time. I've been saying since last fall that they would mandate it by this coming fall, and I'm still holding that prediction, and it's now being talked about openly as Biden is talking about making it mandatory for the military come fall because they believe that they will have the approval by the FDA at least by then. And, of course, then it will become mandatory for school, for work, for all these other things once they take off the emergency use authorization. That's the only thing that's stopping employers. And, of course, the government will not mandate it for us because they don't want the challenge. But it's going to be anything that they control directly, like the military, they will mandate it for them. But they will go through businesses for the rest of us. But getting back to the fireworks. Last year, many vendors sold out early. They depleted the buffer that they would normally have, so they expected a shortage of fireworks this year. I don't know if you experienced that or not. They said last year the Milwaukee company had a 49% increase in sales. And so they said that they only expect to receive about 70% of what they ordered from China last year because all the supply chains are busted, predominantly the freight ships, massive logjam to try to get stuff out of China. And so they think they're only going to get a 70% of what they ordered, but they said that they had bumped it up significantly because of the big increase last year. So they think that they'll be pretty much okay, this one particular store. And they said that because of the shortage, they have now increased the prices 15 to 25%. That's what we're seeing everywhere, on everything. We have a busted supply chain. And oh, by the way, we're going to talk about more busting of the supply chain. The Kaseya hack, a massive hack that's coming up. We'll talk about that as well. But I want to talk first about what happened over the weekend. Rosanna Arquette is not happy about fireworks. You need to give it up for Mother Earth. She says, I love fireworks, but boy, do they pollute the atmosphere. You know, you got to lower that carbon footprint, right? You know, only one trip every 3 years on an airplane, maybe, if you're vaccinated. No meat for you, and you're going to live in a 200-square-foot micro-apartment in a city where they can watch everything that you do. That's the plan. And we have to do it for Mother Earth. And this has been going on for decades. As a matter of fact, the scientist Lovelock, who came up with the Gaia theory, and again, Gaia is the pagan idea of Mother Earth, and they just reimagined that, and I've talked many times. So one day I'm going to go back and get our tapes if they're still intact. But in 2001, I took my kids to London, and we were giving them some playtime in the Children's Museum, and they had a propaganda loop that was running constantly. And the whole point of it was, and Gaia was really big at that point in time. And we were on the train, and somebody left behind a science magazine in the UK, and it was all about Lovelock and the Gaia theory and how the Earth is a sentient being, and you and I, human beings, the entire human race, is nothing but a virus. Oh. It keeps coming back to that virus, and so we, the virus, have to be eliminated. What better way to do it than with a virus, right? But this whole idea is something that really does fit into the imagination of Hollywood because Hollywood is so pagan. They love the idea of a pagan Earth that just evolved into a sentient being. And you always hear these actresses talking about, you know, Jennifer Lawrence saying, well, I've got the hurricane. And that must be because Mother Earth is upset about climate change and how we're changing the climate and so on. And so that's basically the paganism, the mysticism, is being channeled out by this dark thing we call Hollywood and people who have been part of that coven, really, is what it is. So this particular witch, Rosanna Arquette, I'm being polite, I'm calling her a witch. I love fireworks, but boy, do they pollute the atmosphere and cause anxiety with the noise. At some point, we're going to have to give up some things for the well-being of Mother Earth and for humans to survive. She actually used the term human. Human. Now, that's not politically correct, right? As NPR complains about the Declaration of Independence. Anyway, I know at what point in time we will have to give up all these things for the well-being of Mother Earth and for the survival of the Earth, not necessarily the humans. They've been very specific about that. 2030. The UN 2030 Agenda for Sustainability, the Great Reset, 2030. Bill Gates is on the same page as Rosanna Arquette. Weep, she says. As our world is burning, our dependence on fossil fuels will be the end of mankind. President Biden, please take action before more disasters like this happen, more fireworks disasters. And in Walt Disney World and Disneyland in California, they now have a more inclusive fireworks greeting. You know, they do fireworks every night. And as a matter of fact, they get millions of dollars. They get tens of millions of dollars in subsidies for doing these fireworks. Supposedly, they're doing studies for the government on fireworks. That's the lie. It's just shoveling money to Disney because they're a big corporation connected and because they're a big media organization. And so they find a very convenient lie to funnel them tens of millions of dollars to do fireworks. But now in the announcement, it used to be, "Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Boys and girls, dreamers of all ages." Now it just says, "Good evening, dreamers of all ages." Because it's too sexist to say, "Ladies and gentlemen and boys and girls," because who knows what they are at this day and age, right? Are you a lady or a gentleman or a boy or a girl? You don't know. Don't know. And then there's these fireworks in Chicago. More than 70 people shot over the 4th of July weekend. But of course, that's simply because, you know, the mayor is black. You shouldn't say anything about that, because any criticism of what's going on in Chicago is simply racism against her, except that most of the people shot were black, shot by blacks in Chicago. But let's not talk about that. Biden tells Americans that getting vaccinated is the most patriotic thing you can do. He said, "My fellow Americans," channeling LBJ, "that's the most patriotic thing you can do. So please, if you haven't gotten vaccinated, do it now for yourself, for your family, for your community, and for your country." No, I think the most patriotic thing we can do is to resist something that should have, A, never been funded. Where are the Republicans when tens of billions of dollars are being stuffed into the pockets of big pharmaceutical companies? Don't you have a problem with that? No, you don't. Why? Because they're stuffing some of that money back in your pockets, aren't they, Republicans? And Democrats. You should have had a problem with that, the constitutionality of that. Where are these fiscal conservatives when it comes to Operation Warp Speed? But I have a duty, my patriotic duty, is to resist the lockdown, to resist the vaccine mandates, to resist the idea that government can tell me what I have to put in my body. You're not allowed to tell me what medicines I can't have, can or cannot have. There's no authority for the FDA to exist. There's no authority for the DEA to exist. You cannot tell me what I can put into my body. If you think you can, then you need to have a constitutional amendment like they did for alcohol prohibition. The 18th and the 21st Amendments were there because of the 9th and 10th Amendment. Now they don't even bother to pay any attention to the Constitution. But I have a duty to resist a government that dictates to me what my health care choices are going to be. Where are the pro-choice people on any of this? Oh, they're the ones telling you you got to get the jab. And so when we look at this, as I said for the longest time when I talked about medical marijuana, for example, and that laid the foundation of how we peacefully take our powers back. Pay attention, Second Amendment people. The way you get your power back is the way that the people did for medical marijuana. First of all, you have to want it badly enough to do something about it, but then you can stop it, and you can stop it by your legislature or by a referendum, and if enough people want it, and if there's no constitutional authority for the government, then even somebody who is a Reefer Madness fan like Jeff Sessions, will not do anything about it. And that's the bottom line. If you want to protect any of your freedoms, you do it the same way it was done with medical marijuana. You just defy their unconstitutional actions. You do it by using the Ninth and Tenth Amendment, the power of the state, the power of the people, to stand up for individual liberty. It's easy. It's easy. But there's a special birthday greeting that I want to play, and I gave a little bit of a musical soundtrack to Matt McConaughey. He had, the actor Matt McConaughey is going to be running for governor here in Texas, and so he decided that he would weigh in with a very encouraging, upbeat message for America on the 4th of July. Here's Matt, baby.
Happy birthday, America. Yes, indeed, as we celebrate our independence today, as we celebrate our birth as a nation, a day that kickstarted a revolution to gain our sovereignty, let's admit that this last year's trip around the sun was also another head-scratcher. But let's also remember that we are babies. You know, as a country, we are basically going through puberty in comparison to other countries' timelines. And we're going to go through growing pains. We are going through growing pains. This is not an excuse to say this. It's just a reality. And this is good because we got to keep learning. We got to keep maturing. We got to keep striving. We got to keep climbing. We got to keep building. And we got to make sure we maintain hope along the way as we continue to evolve. Why? Because it's who we are. Why? Because the alternative sucks.
Yeah, the alternative sucks, doesn't it? I have not liked Greg Abbott whatsoever, but the alternative sucks. I think Greg Abbott sold us out. No doubt in my mind about it. $300 million for contact tracing at the very beginning of this to a shell corporation. I mean, it was bogus to the extreme. And of course, you know, now virtue signaling about $250 million, less than he spent for contact tracing, to protect the border with a wall, which he's not going to do that either. It's all just virtue signaling and money thrown to his pals. Greg Abbott is horrible. He has misled people about protection against vaccine mandates, not doing anything about it. It's just all virtue signaling. And then, and of course, he does suck. And then so does the alternative. I mean, look at this guy. Listen to what he had to say. Yeah, we're just babies, right? We're kind of like in puberty. Somebody that has that kind of an attitude toward you, there's two things you can see in this little speech. And he goes on to say, and I didn't play the whole thing for you. He says, because it's all just Hollywood pablum like that. But he goes on to say, yeah, we got to keep realizing that we're in a place where our individual pursuits and desires need to be appreciative and supportive of our collective responsibilities. In other words, subordinate. You subordinate the individual to the collective. That's why he's running as a Democrat, because that's their fundamental principle. You subordinate the individual to the collective. I don't care about your health anymore. We got to look out for the health of the hive, right? And if you ignore the health of the individuals in the hive, then you're really not protecting the hive at all, right? Because a hive is nothing other than a collection of individuals. The collective is a collection of individuals. And if you are have nothing but contempt for the rights, for the liberties, for the health of the individual, then you have contempt for the hive, for the collective. But notice that he says you have to subordinate your individual pursuits. He doesn't anywhere in here use the term liberty, of course, right? Democrats and Republicans don't talk about liberty, not even on the 4th of July. But you subordinate your individual pursuits to the collective responsibilities. So you're responsible. Responsible to who, Matt? Am I responsible to the government? Am I responsible to God? Oh, no, he would say you're not responsible to God. Well, then who am I? Am I responsible to Biden? Do I have to answer to Matt McConaughey? And, of course, this is not his first rodeo saying this kind of nonsense. As he was testing the waters initially for his run back in the middle of May, he was saying things like, I'm like, come on, man. I'm not believing you're really scared of this little cotton thing, talking about masks, the Fauci. And I don't really feel that takes away from your identity and from your freedom. All right. Travis does that much better than I do. So that little rag, you afraid of that little cotton thing there? Well, they seem to be afraid of that bigger cotton thing, that stars and stripes. That really bothers them. Why? Because the flag is a symbol of something, isn't it? And that little cotton Fauci you put over your mouth, that's a symbol of something, isn't it? It's a symbol of the individual being subordinated to the collective. And it's also a symbol of insanity. If your mask doesn't protect you, if you want to wear a mask, go ahead. I believe in liberty. If you want to wear a full hazmat suit to live your life, and if you want to walk around like the Bubble Boy, remember that? The kid, the first time that happened, I think there was a TV movie about that back in the 70s or something. A kid who was born without an immune system, and he lived his entire life in like a space suit from NASA, the Bubble Boy. If you want to go around life dressed like the Bubble Boy, knock yourself out. I really don't care. Don't make me participate in your masquerade, though, because I'm not going to do it. And so it's like, yeah, I can't believe that you're afraid of this whole thing. No, we're not afraid of that. What we're afraid of is that big thing called the government that doesn't know how to stay in its lane, that keeps interjecting itself into our lives with demands about all kinds of things. And he says, there's no data that says it's not a good thing, no data that says it's harmful. Let's take one for the team here. Again, the collective responsibility and the ignorance. There's no data, Matt. There's no data that says that it works. There is data that says that it's filthy. Why don't you send one of these things? Oh, that's right. People did do that. You did have parents who were upset about the fact that their kids were being forced to wear a mask for 8 hours a day in school. And so they did an experiment, and they sent some newly washed masks in, along with a newly washed mask that had been worn for a day, along with a T-shirt and some other things like that, to have a chemical analysis done of it. And I talked about this, the unbelievable petri dish of bacteria and garbage that accumulates on the thing, because it is a face diaper. It's as filthy as your diaper would be if you wore it for 8 hours a day and we're not allowed to take it off to go to the bathroom, because that's one of the ways that we eliminate waste, is through our mouth. And in 2002, a study in Australia done by medical people there said even the N95 mask, after 20 minutes, is so saturated with moisture that the droplets get pushed out. So they said, it doesn't do any good to wear these masks, even an N95 mask, even in a medical environment. So yeah, there's a lot of data that shows, A, it doesn't work. B, it is a bad thing. And then there's the whole idea, just like the vaccine, as I said, if I believed that the vaccine was 100% safe and effective, and I do not, but if I believed that, I would still refuse it if it was mandated, because that's the patriotic thing to do. Matt McConaughey finished up by saying, let's be on the way to being the best we can be. Let's make that a song. We can't not sing. Why? Because it's who we are. We got to be. And again, the alternative sucks. He just underscores that. Yeah. Yeah. He is the sucking alternative to the Republicans. But again, I would just say this to Matt. You know, Matt, some of us have been singing in church for the entire year last year. A lot of churches went back in July. Some of the pastors who had churches that went back in July last year, singing, that was a key thing. That was the thing that got them to understand, finally, that they weren't going to cooperate with this fantasy anymore. Many of them had already come to the realization by July that this is not a pandemic. They could just look around them. You know, if you look at reality instead of the media, this is a media virus, a media pandemic. You have to watch TV to know that it's there. And so they knew what it was about. And it was, I guess we could call it a come to Jesus moment for some of the pastors when they said, all right, now they're telling us that we can't sing. Okay, so we're going to meet now and just ignore this whole thing. And so they put some of them in jail in Canada. The culture war has a new target, though. It's Independence Day, and when you go back and you look at what they're trying to do, we've already seen this with Columbus Day. They have removed that, removed the Columbus statues. They're now calling it Indigenous Peoples Day in some areas. And the same thing is being done with the 4th of July, removing that and now saying, well, we're going to replace that with Juneteenth. That was pretty obvious to a lot of people that that was what they were planning on doing. Many of them openly said it. And now you see a massive pushback on this 4th of July about how the 4th of July is racist, racist, racist. So you know that's got to be replaced with Juneteenth, right? Americans have labored for centuries to fulfill the promise of the American Revolution, writes Zero Hedge, striving to create a just society where people are sovereign and there is equal opportunity for all. But that's supposedly not what it's about. They're focusing. You have black Democrats like Mad Maxine Waters, and you have NPR trashing the Declaration of Independence. They don't like the language. You know, it talks about mankind and things like that. You know, very, very, the pronouns are just all wrong. They're sexist. And so, you know, they didn't use terms like people of color or whatever. I mean, it's just, but I like what American Thinker had to say. They said they ignore the fact that the language of the Declaration served as justification for the abolitionist movement. Think about that. You see, you'll see the articles that were written by left-wing press over the weekend, quoting Frederick Douglass when he said, what to the black man, or I think he used the term to the slave. What to the slave? What to the slave is the 4th of July? And what he was using in that, he embraced, what they don't tell you is that Frederick Douglass embraced the principles and shamed them for not applying those principles to everybody, to free the slaves. So he goes, how can you celebrate the idea of the brotherhood of man and all of us being created equal before God and yet still have slaves? See, he was using the Declaration of Independence and pointing out that it had not been fully applied yet. And he was not saying we need to throw this thing out, which is what these people are saying, after it has been applied. You understand the difference? These people want to put us back into a state of slavery. They want us to be enslaved to the government, dependent on it for anything and everything that we can do and that we can say. That is totalitarianism defined. When they control what you say, when they control what you think. And they do that through the language, they do that through the culture, they do that through the history that they rewrite. The ideas inherent in the Declaration of Independence, the idea that our rights come from God, they're not granted to us by a ruler. And of course, Joe Biden, from the very beginning of my experience with him, first time I realized where Joe Biden was coming from was in the Clarence Thomas Supreme Court hearings. Now, isn't it interesting? You have a black justice that Joe Biden did not want. And the reason he did not want him, listen to this, the reason he did not want him was because Clarence Thomas embraced the idea of natural rights. The idea that we have these rights inherent in our humanity, created in the image of God, created equal before God. And so Joe Biden attacks a black man saying, you're not allowed to be on the Supreme Court. Why? Because you embrace the concepts of natural rights and of the human dignity of all people. And that's what Frederick Douglass was saying. But they use it in the left-wing press to say, see, Frederick Douglass hated the Declaration of Independence. No, he didn't. He loved its principles. He just wanted them applied equally to everybody. Big difference. But that's how these people will spend their lives. So, yes, the idea that the purpose of government is to protect those God-given liberties, not to grant them as privileges. And that when the government doesn't do that, it is the right and the duty of the people to alter or to abolish it. That's one of the things that the left finds the most frightening, frankly. We celebrate the 4th of July with fireworks. Why? Because it was fireworks that got us our independence. You know, there's something about explosions that seem to be the prerequisite to freedom. That's true of internal combustion engines as well. You have those explosions there, and you fire all the guns at once, and you explode into space, as Steppenwolf would say. No, National Public Radio, I like the way Sarah Edge put this, has become a propaganda organ of the left. Wait a minute. Where have you been? They were a propaganda organ of the left from its creation. They've never had anything conservative. This has always been a state mouthpiece of leftist propaganda. And so they say in their editor's note, they attack the Declaration of Independence. Why? Because of its language. That's not the problem that they have with the Declaration of Independence. The problem that they have with it is the same problem that Joe Biden has. Their view of the world is that the individual is to be subsumed into the hive, subordinate to the hive, and you will have some wise rulers, presumably like Joe Biden, who will tell the hive what the hive can and cannot do. And, of course, they envision themselves as being those benevolent dictators. Well, dictators are never benevolent. NPR denounces the Declaration of Independence as a racist slur. It says, all men are created equal, but women and enslaved people, what about them? What about them? It contains a racist slur against indigenous people. I guess it never occurred to Thomas Jefferson to refer to indigenous people as people of color. You know, you can say people of color now. These are the language games they play. Remember, it was a few years ago when everybody descended on Clive and Bundy because he said colored people. How dare you say that? I mean, that was like three or four terms ago, right? You have the NAACP. What is that? The National Association for the Advancement of, what is it? Oh, colored people. Yeah, that's right. They haven't changed their name. They haven't gone to NAAPC. Of course, that would be fitting, wouldn't it? Politically correct. But it doesn't, again, going after these terms, that's not what they have a problem with because they're constantly changing the terms. Once they get you to use their language and change from one term to the other, then they immediately change it to something else because it's all about their power to make you do and say what they want, to define the terms of debate. And, of course, for many, the framing of America is done in the entertainment business. Marvel Comics has Captain America now still on a crusade that he's been on for the last decade to make America socialist, to attack anything that does not align with the Democrat Marxist agenda, frankly. So now they have, in the first issue of a new series, The United States of Captain America, published on June 30th, just 4 days before the 4th of July. They have Captain America grousing, writes Breitbart, about how America's built on lies. Quote, I'm loyal to nothing except the dream, says Captain America. Here's the thing about a dream, though. A dream isn't real. I'm starting to think America actually has two dreams and one lie. The first American dream is the one that isn't real. It's one that some people expect to just be handed to them, and then they get angry when it disappears. When the truth is, it never really existed in the first place. Well, if you're looking for a handout, that's not the American dream. He says, the dream with the white picket fences, that's a lie that doesn't get along nicely with reality. Why? Because there's other cultures, and there's immigrants, and there's the poor, and he didn't add, and then there's the environment, and we have to take away those single-family homes, and that's what the Biden administration is working so hard to do by nationalizing zoning and getting rid of the single-family home. Yeah, the American dream has to be sacrificed to the climate scheme, to the Great Reset scheme, to the UN agenda to take everything that you have so that you own nothing. That's really what we're talking about here, about imposing this radical agenda of environmentalism. And we've gotten a taste of it this last year. How do you like that? How'd you like the introductory taste to climate change? It was always the agenda. They just took out the basis for it, that we're all going to, let's see, it's going to be freeze or we're going to be melting down. Oh, no, now it's a virus. But the tactics and the goals always remain the same. And that's what it really looks like. So, yeah, this is Captain America Comics. And you remember back in, 10 years ago, he was attacking the Tea Party. Captain America was. And he was calling them teabaggers and things like that. And you've got the actor who plays the replacement for Captain America. Anthony Mackie, who plays Sam Wilson, delivers a strong monologue as he takes on the mantle of Captain America. I haven't bothered to watch that. I did see the clip where they did the, you know, Disney owns everything now. They own Marvel as well. And so he goes to Disneyland, and he's got his new improvised costume, and he goes, now that a black man is Captain America, everybody can identify with it. Is that really what America is about? The color of skin? You don't identify with principles anymore, right? That was the thing that was so endearing about the first Captain America movie, was the character's ideals and his character. You know, it was a character who had character as opposed to identity boxes that he checked. It was about the content of his character, not the color of his skin. That's what made the first Captain America movie so appealing. Now it's just become another virtue signaling instrument of culture change. Maxine Waters criticizes the Declaration of Independence, of course. You would expect her to. She says, so the Declaration of Independence says all men are created equal. Equal to what? What men? Only white men? Yeah, well, maybe she should resign and she should establish her own utopian area. Even the Statue of Liberty is now denounced as a symbol of hypocrisy. Wait for it. Wait for when they pull it down, right? Wait till they get the chains out and pull down the Statue of Liberty. Anything that is a symbol of America has got to be removed. So it's eventually going to go down, just like the Planet of the Apes. Are you going to be riding by it? And you see the torch sticking up out of the sand like Charlton Heston? Saying, how did we lose this? Because the barbarians are at the gate. As a matter of fact, they're inside the gate. They're inside Congress. They're inside NPR. So when you look at this, you know, this is a gift. I've had a lot of people say, well, you shouldn't use a Statue of Liberty because it's, you know, harkens back to a pagan goddess or whatever. People, you can go back and you can find whatever you want to in terms of etymology of something. You know, people say, well, you shouldn't use the certain Christian sects that say you shouldn't use the terms Thursday and stuff like that. The Quakers did that or something. Because that was named after Thor. You know, in January it was named after Janus and so forth. Well, it's not what it means to me. I have that Christian liberty to understand what it means. And yet, when we look at the Statue of Liberty, it was given by the French people, quote, the Statue of Liberty enlightening the world was the purpose of it, a gift from the French people of the United States. And the opening music that we used for the show was by John Williams, and it was called Liberty Fanfare. And it was a piece that he wrote for the centennial celebration of the donation of the Statue of Liberty to the United States. So, I think it is fitting that they would come after it. As a matter of fact, I think if they do come after the Statue of Liberty, do you have the clip, Travis? Remember this clip from Zombieland? Do you have that? Okay, play that clip. Remember this clip at the beginning of Zombieland? Of course, it was a Columbia picture. And Columbia, named after, wait, Columbus. Their symbol was also Statue of Liberty. That studio's just got to go. As a matter of fact, I think it's been bought and sold so many times that they probably don't even use that name anymore. Sony bought them years ago, I think. But at the beginning of Zombieland, play the little clip, Travis. you have, instead of Zoom's and the usual logo, the Statue of Liberty there. And as she comes to life and uses the torch to smack the zombies who are coming after her. There you go. Takes out both of them and then resumes the pose. Yeah, that's what I imagine we need to do, isn't it? I'll say one more thing about the 4th of July, and that is the University of North Carolina, the headline says, University caves and grants tenure to the 1619 Project founder, Nicole Hannah Jones. Frankly, folks, this is not a cave. They didn't cave. I used to live very close to University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And let me tell you, it was no mistake for them to pick somebody that had created the fiction called the 1619 Project and to give her tenure, even though she was not a professor there. And they put her in as the night chair, no relation, the night chair in race and investigative journalism at the university's School of Journalism. Well, it was no mistake that they gave her tenure. The mistake was when somebody found out about it and took her out, and they have now corrected that because that's what UNC is always about. UNC was also involved, of course, at the epicenter of this gain-of-function research that was done by Fauci at Wuhan. Of course, you don't hear the mainstream media focusing the guns on UNC, do they? It's always just Wuhan, Wuhan, Wuhan. It's China, China, China. Well, as far as I'm concerned, UNC, we used to abbreviate it UNC-CH for Chapel Hill. As far as I'm concerned, it stands for China. These people think and act like Chinese, and they do the same kind of gain-of-function research, the professor who's there. Before I left North Carolina, well, right at the time that I was leaving North Carolina, it was discovered that UNC Chapel Hill was also funding a research that would violate the Nuremberg Code. Right there in Research Triangle Park, they had, with the EPA, they were involved, and they had, the EPA was running research where they were looking for people who had respiratory issues and heart issues as volunteers for an experiment that they wanted to use to argue for an increase in regulations on air quality, what they call fine particulate matter. Particulate matter at 2.5 microns or bigger, I guess. Bigger or smaller. Anyway, that was the thing. And so the narrative was that if you have a fireplace, if you have a barbecue, if you have a diesel engine, you're going to be putting out fine particulate matter. On their website, they actually showed a picture. Now, these are people who live in North Carolina. How could they be so incredibly ignorant? They showed a picture of the Smoky Mountains saying that was fine particulate matter. No, that is a weather phenomenon of clouds and fog. It was always the Smoky Mountains before there was any industry. But the thing that was particularly galling was they selected people who had these health issues, and then they filtered out the carbon monoxide, but the rest of it they hooked up unfiltered and exposed them to levels that were 72 times what the EPA had said was acceptable. And at the same time this was happening, you had the EPA director, Lisa Jackson, giving congressional testimony with then-Congressman Markey from Massachusetts, who's now been promoted to a senator for these types of lies. And the two of them had worked up a little dialogue between them, and he actually stepped on some of her lines. But she was telling people that more people were dying from fine particulate matter than from cancer. Does that sound familiar? Does that sound like the kinds of lies you heard this last year? They just keep recycling the same stuff. And so the group that I was with at the time said, all right, if that's true, if this, she said, and she clarified, she said, I'm not saying people are getting sick, people are dying. If that's true, and if you're exposing them to a level of this stuff that's 72 times higher, then you should be brought up for charges under the Nuremberg Code and filed suit to get a restraining order to stop these experiments. And a judge shut that down, predictably. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Here's where you can find the show and how you can support us.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us.
It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com. And again, you'll find the links to everything for the podcast, and we'll be putting in a link to where you can find us on Aftermath, aftermath.fm. Welcome to the listeners at Aftermath FM. We're grateful to be on that platform. So we'll have links to that, other places where you can find us, DLive, Trovo, as well as all the different video channels that we have on alternative platforms, and where you can find the podcast, and of course, very importantly, how you can support us, The David Knight Show. I want to talk a little bit now about some headline news before we get into the vaccine and into the Kaseya hack that has happened over this last weekend. If we look at what is happening with the Second Amendment, we get two different states have a very different approach to ammunition. We have Pennsylvania Democrats have proposed a bullet tax and requiring manufacturers to encode individual bullets so they can track the individual bullets and tie them to the people who purchase ammunition. Now, fortunately, this is introduced by Democrats, of course, and it will not happen in Pennsylvania right now because Pennsylvania is controlled by Republicans. It has a lot of practical issues in terms of how this would be implemented, obviously, if you stop and think about this. How in the world could you track all this ammunition, and why would you do this? Well, let's just take a look, though, at what Democrats are fantasizing about in terms of infringing on your Second Amendment rights. A 5 cent per bullet tax was proposed by some Pennsylvania Democrats, two of them, as a matter of fact. The tax would fund a state police database of ammunition sold in Pennsylvania. And so they said, since 2015, only 21% of the nearly 8,500 shootings that Philadelphia has endured have resulted in an arrest or conviction. So this is coming out of, you know, the idea that in Philadelphia and in Chicago, where again, over the 4th of July weekend, we had 70 people shot. Who do you think is doing the shooting? This law-abiding people who go get their stuff at retail. The naivete of this is just astounding. Now, these are gangs typically involved in criminal activity, typically with drugs. And these are rival gangs shooting each other. They don't get their stuff at retail. They don't get background checks. What are these people on anyway? What are they? How stupid do they think you are? Well, they know who their base is, don't they? By maintaining a record of purchases of ammunition, says the memo, our law enforcement officers will be able to easily trace the ownership of any ammunition involved in a crime. It's very simple. We just make all the criminals go buy everything in Pennsylvania at a retail store, and it's all solved. We don't have to do any forensic stuff. As a matter of fact, they say, yeah, you got this complicated stuff like ballistic fingerprinting. To do all this, and you know, that you got to have special equipment and skill to do that. Yeah, they're called police detectives. It's called police departments. Is it easier to train the police and to get the equipment to do that than it is to create a database of every single bullet sold? I mean, just from that standpoint. But it's not simply about that. It's not about how unworkable this is. This is about this argument to say, well, you know, we have to have this to solve the crimes. Look at how many crimes we have, and look at how hard it is for us to solve these crimes. And so we need to have something that's going to make it easier for the police. Well, let me tell you, if you make everything easy for the police and difficult for the citizens, that's called a police state. Do you want to live in a police state? Because that's what we're talking about here. And that is the argument we should use. Now, this is the traditional argument made by people who support the Second Amendment. And this is a valid argument. But I'm going to tell you, it's not the best argument you can use, in my opinion. Gun Owners of America's Pennsylvania director said, the plan amounts to registration and taxation of a constitutional right to own ammunition. And that's absolutely true. Absolutely true. If you register your ammo, That's a prelude to confiscation, just like firearms registration would be. This is the agenda of Philadelphia Democrats, registration and confiscation. And we've seen that here in Austin as well. It was probably about 8 years ago that we had a meeting, and it was the number two guy right underneath the mayor here in Austin, and they were having a gun control rally in the Capitol steps, and I was there filming it with Jakari Jackson. My wife was also there, and there was one person who was protesting in this small crowd of loyal Democrats who want to get rid of guns. And this one protester in favor of gun freedom and against the prohibition measures of the infringements that they were proposing at the time had a sign up that said something about gun confiscation. And the mayor pro tem said to him, he said, you know, that sign, that's not true yet, but you hang on to that sign because it's going to be true. Now, the sign was about gun prohibition. And so he tacitly, and that was a real big deal about 10 years ago. For a Democrat to admit that, yeah, this is really about gun confiscation. But now they openly admit that it's about gun confiscation. They don't even try to hide the agenda anymore. And that's where we are right now. And so it is about registration, and registration is about confiscation. It's not about stopping crime. But let me say that as true as that is, when you talk about that, you're only addressing people who are in the gun owners group. Right? And again, go back to medical marijuana. Marijuana did not get legalized initially by saying, we just want to have marijuana for recreational use. They couldn't get the support for that. It got legalized because people realized that there was a big practical advantage to medical marijuana. And it was out of that pragmatism, not out of a principle. You know, you never saw people say it's a few people would say it, but it wasn't the argument that got traction. You know, my body, my choice. I should be able to determine what medicine I want. And if I want to get high, I should be able to get high, that type of thing, like you have with alcohol. But nobody made the constitutional argument that you needed to have a constitutional amendment to prohibit alcohol. Where's your constitutional amendment to prohibit marijuana? No, they focused on the medical aspect of it. And people could see that there were certain medical conditions. For example, if you're taking chemotherapy, the only thing that really controls it, it's not Marinol or these artificial patented drugs that try to tap into something in marijuana that stops the nausea. It only worked if you had actual marijuana. You had a situation, there's an exemption here in Texas, even though they don't support medical marijuana by law here in Texas. They made one exemption because of a conservative libertarian representative out of Longview, Texas, David Simpson. Same guy who stood up to the TSA and almost got the TSA groping kids shut down, but didn't quite make it. But he's always on the right side of everything. And very conservative, very Christian representative, David Simpson, great guy. Now, he would be the guy to run for governor, but he doesn't want the job, I think. But he got pushed through. He said, in my district, there are kids who have uncontrollable seizures. And they've tried every medicine that's been produced by Big Pharma and doesn't work. And so these parents have taken their kids to Colorado, where they were able at the time to get medical marijuana, and it worked. But now if they bring that home with them to Texas, then they are facing jail terms and losing their children. And these are kids who are having constant seizures, life-threatening seizures all the time. By the way, many people believe that that is a consequence of some of the childhood vaccines. That's one of the adverse effects. That just as an aside. Nevertheless, what he did was he was able to get through that exemption, even though we don't have a recognition of any medical uses for marijuana. That's why marijuana is a class one drug, because they say it has no medical uses. And yet we've had now two-thirds of the states recognize that it does. So if you want to defend the Second Amendment, look at what happened with medical marijuana. You make common cause with people, and you make it about the liberty issue, and not simply about the local cannabis club or High Times or whatever, or about the gun shooter club. You have to make this broader, and you have to get people to understand the principle that we should not sacrifice every liberty and freedom and privacy bits that we have to the police to live in a police state, because somehow we'll be safer in a police state. As I've always said, to the extent that you give up your liberty, to that extent you become a slave. It's a zero-sum game. And slaves are never safe. They're never prosperous. And you can't, you know, when you're in prison, you can't even be protected from a drug overdose, quite frankly, because the people who want it badly enough, if they've got connections on the outside, you know, you have several hundred drug overdoses every year in the federal prison system. So what kind of a world do we have to have on the outside to keep people from killing themselves? And that's what you have to come at, the freedom angle with all of this stuff. And then when it comes to abuse of something, when it comes to the abuse of a gun, or when it comes to the abuse of a drug, that is where character and Christian principles come in. And that's why they're so important. You know, we're trying to impose these things by force on people. And these are things that come from the inside out. And you know, when we look at what is happening in another state, in West Virginia, you have lawmakers there have taken exactly the opposite approach. They said that gun and ammo purchases in West Virginia are going to be tax-free. They said if you want to buy a gun that's a $2,000 rifle, it's going to be $120 cheaper in West Virginia than compared to neighboring states. And so they're doing everything they can to help their retailers instead of putting obstacles in front of them. Big difference. In Pennsylvania, of course, it's not going to get through because the Republicans are, okay, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to be right back. Stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube.
All right, and that was a quick break because we wanted to reestablish contact with our Aftermath listeners and just want to welcome them in live. And again, so this first day we're broadcasting to Aftermath, so there's going to be a little bit of a hiccup, but I think we are now connected to Aftermath. And welcome to our listeners. Again, if you want to find out more about the program, how you can support us, you can find that at thedavidknightshow.com. I was just talking about the difference in proposals between two different states, one of them, Pennsylvania, where you have a couple of Democrats. Of course, the good news is they're not going to get this through because it's a Republican-controlled Senate. But they wanted to identify and put a tax on each and every bullet. And so they were going to somehow legislate that manufacturers of bullets had to imprint them. There's nobody doing that right now. This is a pie-in-the-sky idea. They're floating this just to get people, just to make this a national agenda. This is the type of thing that the Democrats want to do nationally. But in West Virginia, they're taking exactly the opposite approach. They're removing sales tax on all gun purchases, and they are offering incentives to any weapon manufacturers who would like to invest in West Virginia. The state says if you do $1 million, if you insert $1 million piece of equipment here, if you set up a firearms business here, we will tax it as if it is a $50,000 piece of equipment. In other words, only tax 5% of that. Already one bullet manufacturer, Ranger Scientific, recently announced that it would be building an ammo plant in the state because of the new law. The new plant will provide 400 jobs to residents in Montgomery, West Virginia. So very different approach, two different legislatures. One of them, they want to tax ammunition out of existence. The other one, they want to make it tax-free. Target is finally explaining why nearly all of its San Francisco stores have reduced hours, they say. Well, actually, they changed that headline. The headline used to be, from the San Francisco Gate, Target won't explain why nearly all of its San Francisco stores have cut hours. What gives? No, it's really about what takes, or more specifically, people being allowed to take whatever they wish out of the Target stores. This is San Francisco, where they decriminalized less than $900 of shoplifting at a time. And so we've seen over the last year, year and a half, this has been in existence, videos over and over again of people going in with a cart and just loading stuff up. And if you try to stop them, then you are charged with assault or battery, because they have a right to take $900 at a time. They take that out, they turn it over to somebody else, and then they take another trip back, because each trip is $900 for free. And they wonder why retail stores are closing and reducing their hours. So they've reduced their hours, and it's a mystery to the San Francisco gate. Even though they came out, the obvious solution, then they did an update, and they said, well, okay, here's the update. They said, well, it's due to theft. Yeah, it's called shrinkage in retail. And what happens is, if you got enough shrinkage of your inventory, theft, shoplifting, then eventually the store shrinks. It shrinks its hours, it shrinks its jobs, it shrinks away out of existence. But they were asking this, they said, so, in the original story, they said, so what gives? We reached out to Target for any information regarding the San Francisco hours, but a spokesman did not comment beyond sending us a link to the store's website. So the story will be updated if and when Target provides more information. And, you know, these clueless people at in San Francisco, at the newspaper, just as clueless as the legislators who gave that ability, they finally got their explanation. This is what passes for news in Nancy Pelosi's hometown. Israel has used its first ever AI drone swarm in a battle to hunt down and blitz Hamas terrorists with no human input. This is not about a remote-controlled drone strike or robotic strike. No, these are killer robots that make the decision themselves. And if you really want to understand the full impact of this, I've recommended this book before. I highly recommend it. It's an entertaining read. But I think it also gives you a very realistic understanding of where this technology is going to lead. I've talked to Dr. Noel Sharkey before. He's with the Stop Killer Robots campaign. And he talks about how dangerous this whole idea is of autonomous killing machines. And this one aspect, the artificial intelligence drone swarm, is specifically what is talked about in Daniel Suarez's book, Kill Decision by Daniel Suarez. The particular case that we're talking about here in Israel, the Sun describes the whole idea, the basic idea of a drone swarm is that the machines are able to make decisions among themselves. They operate as a hive mind, if you will. And so they're passing decisions back and forth to each other, and they continue on with their mission even if some of them are taken down. The swarm continues its mission even if it loses drones during the mission. The use of autonomous weapons has led to concerns about whether or not the swarms, artificial intelligence swarms, will commit war crimes. And of course they will. And of course when that happens, they will just dismiss it as, it was a software bug, we didn't mean to do it, we meant well. But, you know, things go wrong. Or, you know, maybe we were hacked by the same people who just hacked into the critical infrastructure. This latest hack is into the supply chain. They said the Stop Killer Robots campaign said there are serious doubts that fully autonomous weapons would be capable of meeting international humanitarian law standards. And that includes the rules of distinction, of proportionality, of military necessity, while they would threaten the fundamental right to life and the principle of human dignity. Let me just intersect here. When you look at these five things here, these are nothing new. See, technology changes, but principles don't, and human nature does not change. And if you go all the way back to Augustine, who lived about 300 AD, he formulated the principles for just war. And these are the principles that were adopted across Western Europe as Christianity provided the basis for our morality. And that means that you have rules of distinction. That's why we wear uniforms, because we want to limit the war. We understand that war is evil, that it should be limited by many things. We want to limit how the destruction is applied. And so for the longest time, that was why all the Western European countries would wear uniforms to identify friend from foe, but also to try to reduce civilian casualties. The idea of proportionality, the idea of necessity, that's why enshrined in the Constitution, we have the forgotten idea that before we have war declared, it should be debated and it should be voted upon by our representatives in Congress. And then after they declare war, then it is conducted by an executive, because you don't want to try to conduct a war by committee. But you should make sure that it is necessary. And part of the understanding of whether or not it is necessary is whether or not you were attacked. All wars would be defensive. And the fundamental right to life and the principle of human dignity was the underlying basis of all of that. And when you look at how things have changed in Hollywood and how things have changed in the military, this story came out on Independence Day because it was 25 years ago, on the 4th of July, that you had this movie introduced. See if you recognize it. I always believed we weren't
allowed to frighten people out there.
Yeah, I'm one of them.
Ah, that's the money shot here. The White House is right there. A lot of military, a lot of dogfights. Yeah, that's right. Independence Day 1996, the day we fight back. That was the trailer. There's an interesting backstory on this, and it really caught my attention because of a personal involvement that I had. In 1996, I threw myself on the sword and actually signed up my name to run as a libertarian for Congress in 1996. So the convention was held up in Washington, D.C. I was living just outside of Raleigh. I was living in Raleigh at the time. So went up to the convention that year, and I connected with a friend of mine from high school who was working in the Pentagon at the time. And he was telling me that what he was working on was vetting scripts. And it was the 4th of July weekend, 1996, when that movie premiered. And so when I saw this story on RT by Tom Secker, British journalist, I thought, wow, that's kind of interesting. The title there is DOD Attempted to Censor Independence Day Movie Script, Show Archive Files. So they were able to get some information back and forth between the people in the Pentagon who were liaising with Hollywood, and that's what my friend did at the time. And he had already told me, you know, went back 25 years ago, he said, yeah, people will come in with scripts, and if it's a movie where there's tanks or there's planes or some of the military, they would like to be able to use our resources to do some filming, so we look at the script. And if we like it, we let them do that. And if we don't like it, we don't let them do that. So if it's going to attack the military or you know, attack the values that we're putting out there, we don't allow that to do it. Now, I don't consider that to be censorship. It is propaganda. It's government-incentivized propaganda. I didn't really like my taxpayer money being used in that way. But the thing that I found interesting about this, this caught my attention because of my personal experience with that, but the thing that really caught my attention were the things that they were suggesting that needed to be changed 25 years ago and how much the military has changed in terms of what it wants to project. Now, listen to some of the things that they were saying 25 years ago, the Department of Defense. They said, as the filmmakers came to them, they wanted access to military bases to film. They wanted access to F-18 fighter jets so they could record audio and video to use in aerial battle sequences. Right? It's going to save them money if they can use this stuff. So in order to do that, they've got to get the script approved by people in the Pentagon. And it was ultimately rejected after a lot of back and forth arguments. But the thing that's interesting is what these archives reveal about what the Pentagon wanted changed. a memo to introduce this, to sell them. You know, this sends this to the Pentagon. Here's the big concept. You know, this is the pitch guy from Hollywood. Perfect Hollywood pitch. Listen to this. We're going to make Star Wars and Top Gun look like paper airplanes. Just wait. There has never been any aerial footage like this before. If this doesn't make every boy in the country want to fly a fighter jet, I'll eat this script. Okay. So, they send in the script. They say, sure, we'd like to see it. So the DOD felt the story had no true military heroes. That was their first criticism. And they said, because Will Smith's character drinks beer, dates a stripper, steals a helicopter, and gives fireworks to a child. Yeah, 4th of July, you're giving fireworks to a child. Yeah. You shouldn't give fireworks to a child. You shouldn't give them drag queen parties either. Okay, certain things you don't give to children. But they came back and they said, all right, we'll get rid of the beer. They're still going to have him dating a stripper, stealing a helicopter, and giving fireworks to a child. But at least the DOD had the right idea on some of these characters, right? Now, what would they do today, right? They would say, well, there's not enough women in it, and there's not any LGBT trannies or whatever, so you got to throw some of that stuff in, and then we'll give you the movie, we'll let you have access to our equipment. Even after several reviews, the military was still urging the writers to, quote, energize and clean up Stevens' actions. Today, they would demand that he be outed as a transsexual, right? You have to be a transgender. That's what they would demand today. In today's Pentagon, I'm not exaggerating. I mean, this is not the Babylon Bee here. You can't keep up with this stuff, with satire. I mean, they're beyond satire. As a matter of fact, you know, a cleaned up Will Smith would have been what I would have liked to see. And that's it's not that great a movie. It also had a lot of reality problems as well. The military had a lot of problems. They said, we don't like how we're shown to be ineffective in the face of a hostile takeover by extraterrestrials. Because they look pretty impotent in the film. They said, it doesn't leave the public with a positive impression of the military and its capabilities. We see military bases and aircraft decimated by the aliens, and ultimately it takes a civilian to stop the alien takeover. In one version of the script, this civilian, Randy Quaid, an alcoholic dropout, a former crop duster, he's a drunken crop duster, okay, he would fly the, as well, he's drunk, he flies his crop duster into the UFO to save the day. So they didn't like that. They said, we don't like the idea that a civilian is saving the human race. So they changed it to having him fly a military plane, but they thought that was problematic because this guy is a drunk. So they rewrote the script to give him a military background. So before he became a drunken dropout crop duster, he was a top-notch fighter pilot. And they still weren't happy about that, so they said, well, give him a little bit of time to sober up. So then they sober him up, and he's back into fighting form, and then he can sacrifice. But then they have Jeff Goldblum's character, a computer expert. He was given an Army intelligence background, and then they talked about how the president had a military background as well. They brought that military background to the foreground for the president. One draft script showed the White House, as you saw there, being exploded. You know, that ray beam coming and explodes from the inside out as Bill Clinton is presumably in there with Monica Lewinsky. And the Capitol is also destroyed. You saw those in the trailer there. Quote, washed under the wall of destruction, the Pentagon, too, is blown to smithereens. Oops, stop right there. We can't have the Pentagon blown to smithereens. Not going to allow that. You're not going to get any of our equipment if you blow the Pentagon to smithereens. So they decided they would not show that. And finally, they were upset about the Area 51 idea. So they had an alien spacecraft that had been kept at Area 51, as well as, I think it was an alien. And they were able to find out some stuff about that that was key to defeating them. But they said, we don't like the idea. We're sick and tired of this hidden alien stuff, they said 25 years ago. They said, the incident at Roswell Air Force Base is a myth. The DOD would not want to support a film which perpetuates myth. DOD cannot hide information from the president. Who would have thought, right? Of course they can't. except they do. So we want to change, this is a suggestion, change custodians of aliens and spacecraft to grassroots public protectionist group. Or at a minimum, some kind of a nebulous government agency. So they created a nebulous government agency that they called the NIA. Oh, where'd they get that from? I should start using that, as a matter of fact, because I talk so much about the NSA and the CIA. I should just call them the NIA. I think that's better than IC, the intelligence community. So, yeah, just combine NSA with CIA. You get the NIA. But they were not happy about that still. They said, Area 51, no. No way. Fictional agency or not. We're sick and tired of hearing about U.S. government capturing aliens. So that's where they were. They had problems with Area 51 narrative because they're sick and tired of getting questions about UFOs. That was 25 years ago. Now they're putting that out for people. they didn't like a character who drank beer and dated a stripper. And now they make the, they put forward drag queens. I mean, we've come a long way, haven't we? Isn't America great? No, we have put Sodom and Gomorrah to shame, frankly. Police will be targeting Americans for their ideological beliefs and their behaviors. Who knew? Who knew? I've been talking about this as long as I've been on air. That the whole purpose of what they're doing with the smart cities and 5G and constant surveillance and what they started enacting with this lockdown last year, it all goes back to geospatial intelligence. Let's say that again because nobody else will use that term. And it is one of the biggest, fastest growing areas of intelligence. It's where James Clapper built his career. Geospatial intelligence. Human domain analytics, anticipatory intelligence, activity-based intelligence. They have been looking to create the... this happened long before China implemented it. They designed these systems in the U.S., funded with black money, and then they use China as a beta system, and then they bring it to us via a fake pandemic. That's what this is all about. And I've been saying for the longest time, that this is about mapping people's religious and political beliefs, geospatial mapping of that. So you monitor how these, but you figure out from where they go and who they have contact with and what they say here and there. Then you can put together a profile of them and target them based on their ideological beliefs. And they were saying, well, yeah, that's kind of true, but we only want to do it to Muslims. I said, no, it's going to be about Christians. The Muslims aren't a threat to them. They use Muslims as a weapon. This is about Christians. They use the Muslims as the boogeyman for 9/11. They use the Muslims as a boogeyman for the Patriot Act, and now it's being internalized for the people that they intended it for all along. Middle-class America. And so now some other people are starting to realize this because now they're explicitly saying it. This is out of Joe Biden's communications, as this article from Zero Hedge points out. For years, DHS officials have warned Americans of the dangers that lurk just outside their front doors or worse, at the far-flung Middle East, where extremists are plotting to bomb us, shoot us, or poison our water system, or take down our infrastructure with computer hacks, right? Now, however, the difference is that the terrorists are Americans who have certain ideological beliefs. Now, these beliefs are characterized as extremist, but they don't define that, just like they don't like assault weapons, but they don't define assault weapons, except they kind of do. They define the ideological beliefs as anything that opposes their leftist Marxist takeover. According to the spokesman for DHS, Cohen, he said, the most significant terrorist threat facing the U.S. today comes from individuals or lone offenders and small groups of individuals who, based on an ideological belief system, primarily an ideological belief system, they self-connect with online activity, but they'll go out and commit an act of violence on behalf of that belief or a combination of ideological beliefs or a combination of ideological beliefs and personal grievances. Now, in that run-on sentence, he used the term ideological beliefs 5 times. What do you think the target of Department of Homeland Security has now become. Well, I think it might be safe to assume, of course I'd be a conspiracy theorist, but I think it'd be safe to assume that it is ideological belief. They want to target people who have certain ideological beliefs, and we all know what those ideological beliefs would be, don't we? Limited government and other things that they don't like. Pushing back against their narrative to try to push the lockdown, the pandemic, or the vaccines. It means that the feds can target individuals for expressing anti-government sentiments. It goes on to say, in many respects, this is much more individualized threat. And what I mean by that is that if you look at the lethal attacks that occur in the U.S., they're conducted by individuals who spend incredible amounts of time online viewing extremist content. Content about past violent attacks. They tend to be individuals who have shared behavioral health or environmental characteristics, said Cohen. So, now we know that what they're after is ideological beliefs. And since your ideological beliefs are about the media that you're consumed, they have to look at that and they have to shut that down. And that's what they've been doing this last year in spades. This last year has been a pandemic of censorship and disinformation, of a single narrative that is pushed out and ruthlessly repressed by mockery by the mainstream media and by censorship from social media and the internet. And now the government is making anyone who disagrees with their narrative into an extremist, into an enemy. So you're going to target people based on their behaviors. You're going to target them for their ideological beliefs. Again, he goes on. Just that one sentence where he talks about ideological beliefs, he brings it back again. What we mean by that, yes, the motive and the ideological beliefs are important as part of the analytical process, but the threat tends to come from individuals who have very superficial understanding of the ideological belief system that they use as validation. But they do have shared behavioral characteristics, so they're going to monitor our behavior, and they're going to draw assumptions about our ideological beliefs. That is the enemy. The target is your ideological beliefs. The tactics is to come after your behavior and to come after free speech online. There is, quote, no official Pentagon definition of extremism. So how can government give more power to law enforcement to surveil and arrest suspected domestic extremists? Well, our goal is to enhance domestic terrorism analysis and to improve information sharing throughout law enforcement at the federal, state, and local level. This involves creating contexts in which those who are family members or friends or coworkers know that there are pathways and avenues to raise concerns and to seek help for those who they have perceived to be radicalized. This is what the Facebook labeling of people. You've been in contact with some extremists. You know, and you need to let us know if there's extremist stuff that you're turning everybody into a snitch. But let me just say, this is just the latest tactic that they have. They've had fusion centers for 15 years or more. It came out after the 2008 election that you had the Michigan Fusion Center was identifying people as extremists who were threats to them. If they had be on the lookout for BOLO notification to the police, to be on the lookout for anybody that had a Ron Paul bumper sticker on their car, or some other candidates that were there. So this is something that as long Chuck Baldwin was one, because again, he's a Christian conservative. This has been there for a long time, and geospatial intelligence began in the late 90s. That's when it exploded. It exploded as they were funding with venture capital. You had the CIA create InQtel. As they were creating and giving money to the pre-approved, just like they approved the scripts, right? They approved the individuals who are going to compete to win a monopoly and control the internet. And we know who those are now, Google, Twitter, Facebook, and others. But they had a lot of people that they funded. And then they put them out there and said, all right, now compete against each other. Same thing they do with the presidential candidates. They pre-select who's going to be allowed to compete in the presidential election. And then they truly do compete against each other to give the illusion of a competitive marketplace. So that is where we are. Real quickly, let's do an update on the vaccines, and we'll bring this in, introduced by Stephen Colbert, cheering Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson, this shill for Big Pharma. Big Pharma and Pfizer. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Chant the names of your sponsors, right? Yeah. More doctors prefer this brand of cigarette over the other leading brands. Father and daughter die just 4 days apart, despite taking different COVID-19 shots. One of them got Moderna. The other one got Johnson & Johnson, and they both died. How about that, Stephen? You want to cheer that? This is posted by the sister of the daughter who died, the daughter of the father. Tragic story out of Michigan. Her name is Catherine Ann Kendall. She said, "My dad had his second dose of the Moderna shot, and within days he died of a heart attack. Prior to the shot, he had had a physical and was given a clean bill of health after digging deeper about the Moderna shot. And heart complications, of course, the heart attacks figure prominently in that. But she says, everybody thinks I'm crazy for questioning if his death was related to the jab." And then she said, it's just a coincidence, all these coincidence theorists. Then she said, "My sister, in late April," that was about the same time, "had flu-like symptoms that night after she got the shot, but she never got better. She was in ICU within days of the shot, then on a ventilator, and died May the 2nd. She got the Johnson & Johnson. She was 49. She had no health problems. She had 4 kids. They claimed that she had COVID pneumonia. But after researching the Johnson & Johnson shot, I found severe lung damage, lung complications, symptoms that were exactly what my sister experienced, and specifically at her age is what I found to be one of the most highly correlated. Yet everybody thinks I'm crazy for questioning if her death was related to the jab." And so Catherine Kendall said, "I'm sharing this information hoping it is helpful for others as we try to understand how this shot has impacted our lives." And, you know, we have the Wall Street Journal. Last week I reported the Guardian was saying, more people who are vaccinated are dying of COVID-19 than unvaccinated. But that's exactly the way that it should work. And now the Wall Street Journal over the weekend came out with the same headline. Some vaccinated people are dying of COVID-19, but here's why scientists aren't surprised. And so they go into the numbers. Now let me tell you what the argument is here. The argument is, all right, so you got a majority of people who are dying are vaccinated now. But that's not to be surprised because a majority of people are vaccinated. So, you know, you got 62%, 63% of the people dying are vaccinated, but, you know, about 59% of the people have been vaccinated. And that's like saying, well, we have 60% of the country. Let's talk about it in terms of race, okay? Because everybody likes to talk about race. We got 60% of the country, let's say, is white, and 40% is people of color. Let's just assume that's the ratio. And then you say, well, our deaths are 60% of the people who are dying are white, and 40% of the people who are dying are people of color. And that's because of the imbalance in those two populations, and that's exactly what their argument is. They say, well, we got a bigger population of people who are vaccinated than unvaccinated, and that's why you're seeing more of them die. Except if the same number of people are dying that are vaccinated versus unvaccinated, it's like the listener who wrote in and said, "I went hysterical laughing when I saw the sign on the highway telling me why I should wear a seatbelt. And the sign said 50% of the people who die are not wearing seatbelts." Well, that means that 50% of the people who do die are wearing seatbelts. So that's an argument that the seatbelts aren't effective, isn't it? and that's exactly what these people are saying. It's like, well, you know, you're getting more people die of the vaccine because there's more vaccinated people, which tells us that the vaccine is not effective. It's not 100% effective, like they're saying. And yet you have Chris Todd, who throws a temper tantrum about the vaccines. And listen to what he has to say. He says, you know, only unvaccinated people are dying. That's not what the Wall Street Journal is saying. That's not what the Guardian is saying. But here's what Chuck Todd is saying as he lectures you into the camera.
Please get vaccinated. If you know someone who's not vaccinated, find a way to convince them to get vaccinated. Literally, the only people dying are the unvaccinated. And for those of you spreading misinformation, shame on you. Shame on you.
Shaking his finger.
People are needlessly dying because of your misinformation. Think about it. I don't know how some of you sleep at night who are doing this for a living on television.
Yeah, I don't know how you sleep at night, Chuck Todd. You pharmaceutical sellout. How much money are they paying you? You know, I'm going to be talking about the Kaseya hack here. Catherine Herridge, left Fox News in a public dispute. She was not happy because she was only making $900,000 a year there. She's working for CBS now, so she's presumably making well over $1 million. What does she do? Well, she covers national intelligence, and what that means is that she basically gets press releases from the NSA, the CIA, the NIA, let's just call it. She gets press releases from the NSA, the CIA, CISA, these other organizations, and just puts it out there, whatever they say. She carries her water for them, and that's what Chuck Todd is doing. Shame on him, because I just told you, the Wall Street Journal and the Guardian are saying it doesn't make any difference. It's medical malpractice, financially incentivized by the executive order declaring a national state of emergency, unleashing trillions of dollars to state governments, to hospitals, to conduct medical malpractice. Keep them away from hydroxychloroquine. Keep them away from ivermectin. And yes, I know, Trump name dropped hydroxychloroquine. And he did nothing about it. The only thing the government did was to grab massive amounts of it and hoard it to keep it off of the market. He didn't defend anybody's right to use it. As a matter of fact, he by dropping its name and not knowing anything about it, not putting up anybody who did know anything about it, he basically was putting out a straw man argument for Fauci to destroy. And so where are we right now? The CDC vaccine adverse effects reporting system, VAERS, shows that injuries have surpassed 400,000 injuries and nearly 7,000 deaths since December the 14th through June 25th. So there you go. 6 months. 6,985 deaths reported. That's up by 872 deaths over the previous week. Now, think about this. I make this comparison all the time between the Boeing 737 MAX and these big pharma vaxes. We had 535, I think it was, people who died in two separate crashes 5 months apart for the Boeing MAX, and they shut the whole thing down. And yet, in 1 week, we have 872 additional deaths and 34,000 serious injury reports. These are, so 400,000 injury reports, 34,000 of them serious, and that is up by 2,800 people in just the last week. So, Chuck Todd, how do you sleep at night? Do you sleep on a big pile of cash these people are paying you off for? Come on, you know better than this stuff. Shake your finger at people and tell us that we shouldn't be saying this. This is how angry they're getting, and of course they're going to shut down people like me. They'll do their best to shut us down. And you'll have nothing but the government liars and propagandists and sycophants and people who are sponsored by big pharmaceutical companies like Chuck Todd pushing you the government line. Pfizer is now going to request emergency approval for COVID vaccine for kids between the ages of 5 and 11. They want to have that by the fall. And so nearly 7,000 people dead, nearly 500,000 people injured following the COVID injections, and we just keep on going. I had this letter sent to me by a listener. By the way, for those of you joining us on Aftermath, if you want to send me any tips or any information or comments, you can do that at davidknightshow@protonmail.com. davidknightshow@protonmail.com. And you can find the links to where the program is everywhere and how you can support us at thedavidknightshow.com. That'll have links to social media, to video clips, to podcasts, to everything there. But this was sent by a listener. He said, I just saw a sign in the Lake District yesterday that amused me. Quote, the Penrith Cattle Auction Market, COVID-19 Vaccination Center. He said, it'd be funny if it weren't true. They really are treating us like cattle. Maybe they should be more honest and put a sign up at the abattoir instead, right, where they do the slaughtering. Yeah, so how you feeling? You feeling independent? Do you think that you're free now? Think you don't have to get these injections or make the choice of sacrificing your career, your education, if you don't get the injections? You feeling that freedom yet? See, I'm not. That's why I continue with the countdown, 479 days since this all began. incentivized by Trump. And you know, I kept hearing from people last year, well, you know, Trump and the GOP won't make us take the vaccine. I said, you don't understand. It's never been the plan. You know, Biden is talking about it. No, we're not going to force people to take it. Of course, they will force their employees, the military, to take it. I don't know if they'll be forcing the bureaucracy to take it, but they will force the military to take it because they have no respect for the military. But it was always the plan. New England Journal of Medicine last March was saying, before all this began, you're going to be locked down and we're not going to let you out and we're going to mandate this, but we have to do it not legally because we don't want a due process challenge. We're going to do this by applying pressure to the employers, and then the employers will pressure their employees. So, what I say to all the people trying to defend Trump for creating the Trump vaccine, the shot that was spread around the world, well, I have to say, where is the constitutional authority for him to create a vaccine like that, to give tens of billions of dollars to these vaccine companies? And, of course, it happened because of people like Fauci and Alex Azar that Trump put in as his head of HHS, the CEO of Eli Lilly. What did you expect? You know, it's been said that personnel is policy. That's the old adage, right? And you look at the horrible people that Trump put in, never. And as he fired them, he replaced them with people who were just as bad or worse than the people he'd originally put in. If you're going to put in generals and bankers and pharmaceutical executives, what you're going to wind up with was the train wreck we saw in 2020. It was built in because personnel is policy. And if you're going to have pharmaceutical executives telling us what we must have, and if you're going to have generals telling us that we've got to stay in these different wars, and you're going to have bankers telling Trump that you've got to, you know, unleash trillions of dollars and bury this country in debt, that's exactly what we got. Yes, personnel is policy, isn't it? As the Defender, that's childrenshealthdefense.org, that's their publication, that's RFK Jr.'s publication. As they point out, if you want any help from your injuries for COVID vaccines, you're going to have to go to GoFundMe because you're not going to get any help from the government. You're not going to get any help from your insurance companies. As a matter of fact, the fund that would the dodge that took away the liability for the pharmaceutical companies for these childhood vaccines that they've been moving inexorably into mandating. So you know they're going to come after the kids with these COVID shots. But that legal immunity that was put in 1986 with Fauci under Ronald Reagan created a vaccine court that very rarely gives any wins to people. And yet, over the years, they have handed out $4 billion. Still, the awards are kept small, and the chances that you're going to get anything are small. It's done by arbitration. It's not done by a jury. And then it's even worse for these particular vaccines because this falls under a new law that was put in 2005 for vaccines that were created in response to some kind of a pandemic. The awards there are capped at $250,000, and virtually no one ever gets that, any of that. So just remember that. A Michigan boy, now this story that I talked about 2 weeks ago, has now hit the mainstream media. You've got a Drudge linking to a Daily Mail report about this. CDC launches investigation after a healthy boy dies 3 days after receiving the second COVID vaccine. This story, again, I pointed out, is out of Minnesota. He lived in a town called Zilwaukee. Not Milwaukee, but Zilwaukee. How about that? And he got the Pfizer vaccine at a Walgreens store. What could possibly go wrong? Right, that's where I like to get my health care, at a drugstore, retail. Rare possible myocarditis association is what they said, but it's rare, so don't worry about it, you know. If your child dies, it's no problem because it's rare. Again, talk about how many people died flying 737 Maxes. You know, there was a lot of people who flew on 737 Maxes that did not crash before they stopped them. A lot of people. So, you know, it's just nothing to worry about. Here's an insert. It will tell you that, you know, you could wind up crippled or dead if you fly a 737 Max, but we're going to keep them flying. That's what they do with the vaccines, right? The other kids in school looked up to this young man and said they voted for him most likely to become president of the United States this last school year. It's too bad. Maybe he would have been a president, unlike Trump, who would not shovel tens of billions of dollars in the pockets of big pharmaceutical companies and produce a toxic vaccine to be spread around the world. Maybe he would have been a better president than Trump. I would have voted for him before I would have voted for Trump. I would vote for a 13-year-old before I'd vote for Trump. After what he did in 2020. So now it's hit mainstream media. Many states, though, minors may consent to receiving COVID-19 shots without their parents' consent or knowledge. And this is why I had Catherine Austin Fitz on Friday. If you haven't seen that, I'll just say this to the people joining us today, Aftermath listeners. You can find the links at thedavidknightshow.com to where the video channels are. And I posted it also on social media over the weekend. I interviewed Catherine Austin Fitz on Friday because she has put together with her staff some forms, and these forms are free, very detailed, and it's a way of you to block this being done to your child. Right? Don't wait for the legislature to do the right thing. You can stop the school from doing this. Basically, it's a long, detailed thing saying, well, you know, what if this happens and what if that happens, and you know you're going to have legal responsibility, and I do not consent to this, and if you do this against my will, you are going to be sued for this because I'm now making it official that I do not authorize that for my child, and other things like that to go on offense against employers who will be mandating that. And you can find that at Solari.com. That's where she has those forms. Those are very valuable to look at those. And she said, change it as you wish, or, you know, but they've gone through it and they tried to be very thorough and detailed. A way to put them on their back foot for you to go on offense and say, all right, you're going to require me to get this as part of my job? Do you realize who's going to pay my medical bills if I have an adverse reaction? Do you realize how many adverse reactions have already been reported? Do you realize that you are going to have financial responsibility for this? Even has a form there to help you to get your relatives who may be on board with this or maybe even passive about it. Well, I don't know, you know. They say it's safe and maybe Junior should do it. Well, okay, well, let's talk about the risk. Let's talk about the downside. What if this goes wrong? What is the present value of having somebody who becomes an invalid and we all have to then take care of them in addition? So like one of the stories that I talked about when they started doing the vaccine lotteries. I said, well, here's a lady who didn't win $1 million. Instead, she got a $1.5 million medical bill, and she's now paralyzed, and she has to have her family members take her to the bathroom. So not only can she not work to pay off this massive debt to the hospital, but she has to have relatives take off time from work to help her. That's what Catherine Fitz did with this. So let's calculate what could possibly go wrong with this and how that would impact our family. So we can make this as a family decision, but then also ways to intimidate schools and employers who want to force and coerce this on you. In many states, it's left up to the healthcare provider to determine. That's in Idaho, Iowa, Washington, and Arkansas. So if they decide that that's going to be done, then, you know, hey, you don't have any say-so on that. And we have some of the states, for example, Tennessee, if the child is older than 14, you know, they don't have to tell you. They can just, kid can be pressured into getting the vaccine. In Oregon, if the kid is older than 15, they don't have to tell you. In North Carolina, teens, they don't have to ask at all. Teens. Iowa, it's up to each individual health care provider and health system. You get the idea. A six-year-old son tells his dad, please don't get the shot, but he did anyway, and now he's dead. And this is a story from vaccineimpact.com if you want to get more details on it. It was a Johnson & Johnson shot. Father was a 53-year-old musician, no health issues. He was told by his kindergarten-aged son, please, Daddy, don't get the shot. You see, it's so obvious. It's so obvious that even a kindergartner can understand this. We don't understand it because we've been disinformed, misinformed by propaganda that is repeated constantly. Listen to those in authority. And that is exactly what his father did. He tweeted out. He said, okay, so I got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine now today, and they put a temporary stop on disbursing anymore due to the blood clot issues. So this is back on April the 13th. He says, well, it's a crapshoot with all these vaccines, I suppose. That's right, sure is. Do you understand the risks? in this casino that you're playing, because big pharmaceutical house is going to win, and you're probably going to lose. Now, the idea is don't shoot crap into your veins. But he goes on to say, I didn't have any side effects from the shot, though, but maybe a slight headache the following day. We'll see what happens. The number of COVID cases are up again. And my six-year-old said, don't get the Johnson & Johnson, Daddy. And so then there was also this surfaced. His relatives put this out after he died. You see this again on vaccineimpact.com. A dialogue going back and forth with a friend. Well, I thought you had COVID. Why did you get the vaccines? He'd already had COVID. He already had immunity. Clearly, this guy has been lied to, because what is the point of this? The point of a vaccine, if it was the theory of a vaccine, is that you're going to expose your immune system to something that is like it or dead or weakened, right? Or very similar to it. And on the basis of that, your immune system will learn how to attack this thing and remember it forever. Okay, that's the whole idea of a vaccine. Now, it turns out it doesn't work that way if you don't actually have the actual virus. It doesn't remember it, so the vaccines typically don't have lasting immunity, which means that you don't get herd immunity if the immunity is not lasting. But if you've already had COVID, your immune system has already been trained. It was trained sufficiently to recognize that and to extinguish that. So, again, if you are going to get a vaccine after you've already had COVID, you don't understand how the immune system operates, basically. So she said, I thought you had COVID. Why'd you get the vaccine? And he said, if you have COVID, your body's only immune to it up to 90 days, they're saying. Again, a lie. After 90 days, you can get it again? And he says, that's what the professionals are saying. She said, well, I look at it this way. Out of 7 million people that received Johnson & Johnson, only 6 cases and more people had issues with actual COVID. So I'll risk the vaccine. And then the person said, well, you got a point. And then he died. And we saw a very interesting, we don't know exactly what happened to these two players, but again, it's an amazing coincidence theory that you had two vaccinated cricket players. This is a West Indies cricket team, women's cricket team. They call themselves the Windies. I thought that was kind of clever, combined West Indies with Windies. But they had all the team had been vaccinated 2 days earlier. And then as they play the game, you had one fall down, and then within minutes, another one falls down. At least one of them had tremendous convulsions. Just a coincidence, I'm sure. An MIT scientist said the COVID vaccines may cause disease in 10 to 15 years. And see, that's the key thing. The previous outing for swine flu in 2009, H1N1, that was, they rushed a vaccine out, Fauci and Slowey, the same two people that are involved in this scam, they rushed a vaccine out. It was called Pandemrix. And that is the best documented case prior to this of adverse effects, because within a year, you started to have children in Scandinavia and Norway. They clearly tied the correlation to it, started getting narcolepsy and catalepsy. Catalepsy is where you freeze. It features in stories about fictional stories like the Telltale Heart, things like that. But narcolepsy, so severe for these kids who got it, that now, as some of them are in their early 20s, many of them have committed suicide because they can't live their life. They're falling asleep everywhere. They can't drive a car. They can't do anything. But that took a year to show up, and it showed up first in children. It's the children who are most vulnerable to this. And that's especially true of this vaccine, because you're injecting something into them that is active. You're not injecting a dead or weakened bacteria. You're injecting something that is active, that is actively creating the spike that causes all of the damage. And so, yes, it is going to affect the children. And already we've seen this happening very, very quickly. Typically, they've been able to get away from any correlation because it would take 10 to 15 years. The exception, of course, was what I just talked about, Pandemrix, where it happened within a year, so they were able to identify. We're seeing this happening immediately. Why aren't we shutting this down? Because safety is not their concern. You should be very concerned about what their agenda truly is. So that's all the time that we have today. I did not get to the Kaseya hack. I'll be continuing the show on 1360khnc.com. And I will talk about what is happening with the Kaseya attack, as well as more information about the lockdown and where we are in terms of freedom and what is happening in Afghanistan. So that's what we'll be continuing with in the next hour. Live on Radio KHNC out of Northern Colorado. Thank you for joining us. And again, if you want to support the broadcast or find out more about it, you can find that at thedavidknightshow.com. Here's more information. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.